I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it like when Tatum play, or Jalen on the breakaway, or Kyrie when he make a trade. And nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth that after you play it, you gotta repeat. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. And well wishes go to Gordon. Listen, after every game is very important, Millie.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast with the Rain and Jays. Today, it's me, your boy, Jay King from MassLive.com, here with Sam Jam Packard, the great. We just battled through some tough technical difficulties. I just wanted to let you know we were heroic to bring you this episode tonight, especially me. Very heroic. Deeply
heroic.
Yeah,
I did nothing at all. This is all Jay King coming through with the technical skills.
Yeah, after I accidentally deleted my entire recording software, I then made the heroic recovery. It was like when Al Horford closed out too strong on Thon Maker, but then blocked the crap out of him at the rim.
Thon Maker got played off the court. He only played 8 minutes the other night. He is, but that was an awesome block by Al Horford. You're right. And it was an excellent comeback by you, because you texted me like 15 minutes ago just saying, I have no idea what's going on right now. And now we're here.
Now we're here because I'm heroic. Hey, Thon Maker is a future MVP of the league, according to Kevin Garnett. That was a wild, wild, wild opinion.
That is an old take exposed. I did not know that was something that was said, but that's crazy. Yeah, no, he barely had any impact on last night's basketball game, which I wanted to ask you about. Me and John did the recap pod last night, but Jay King, you were there. You talked to the players. You talked to Brad. What did you think about kind of the battle of Giannis and Kyrie and Jason Tatum's wild first quarter?
I think Jason Tatum's wild first quarter was as much a wild first quarter by Jason Kidd as anything. Like, he just repeatedly trapped Kyrie Irving. And the Celtics knew exactly what they were going to do, because that's what the Bucks always do. And they just got the ball moving. And Jason Tatum was just wide open on the other side of the court. Like, you don't leave the NBA's top three-point shooter wide open on the other end of the court. I know the last two he made, he had to do little side dribbles. But
those are some saucy side dribbles, though. I haven't seen that from him before.
They were saucy. That kid's going to be really good. But, like, they just trapped for no reason and left Jason Tatum wide open. It was kind of stunning. And that was really the reason that the Bucks lost the game. Giannis tried to bring them back, but then Kyrie'd for a while. And that was that.
I mean, they changed up a little bit in the second half and stopped trapping as much. Tatum didn't even attempt a shot in the second half, but Kyrie, you're right. It's Kyrie. He hit that dagger three at the end and ripped his mask off. It was a brilliant moment.
That was classic. He just ripped the mask off. I feel like he had some beef with Eric Bledsoe. I don't know what it was.
Oh, they were talking the entire night after basically every single play. It was fun.
Yeah, there was some sort of bad blood there. I don't know what it was. Or maybe not even bad blood, just competitiveness. But those two were really going at it. Giannis is on freaking real, man. Like, I don't get how he does what he does. To have no jumper and to still just beat guys to the rim at will is incredible. Like, the Celtics were there to contest most of his shots, and it just didn't matter. He just, like, places his long arms over people. I think Celtics fans probably dream of Jason Tatum doing that one day. Like, doesn't matter.
He's never going to be that long, man.
But he'll be more skilled, and he's already a much better shooter. So,
oh yeah, he might be better than, oh, that's a wild. I just immediately was just like, he might be better than Giannis, and I truly believed it, and I caught myself.
That was a quick jump to that. Quick jump.
I was just thinking, like, he is like almost as long, and he's the most efficient 3-point shooter in the league in his rookie year. Like, the potential is there for a guy who can shoot this well and have his length and attack the rim. I'm going to say it. Why not? He can be better than Giannis.
High hopes for Tatum. And they should be high. That kid is a special rookie.
He's provided me no evidence that would say he's going to be bad. So I'm going to say he's going to be extremely good. Come at me. At me on Twitter if you think I'm wrong.
Can we just talk about the alley-oops for a little while?
Yo, alley-oop city. Marcus Smart is the best alley-oop. I guess it's infectious because he's developed a connection with both Horford and Tice. And now we got Mook Morris throwing alley-oops. Everyone, Tito, like, actually threw a successful alley-oop the other night. I don't know where it came from, but it's great.
Yeah, I went digging into the alley-oop stats the other night, and I didn't expect it to be – like, I knew the Celtics were throwing a lot more alley-oops recently than they ever have before, successful alley-oops at least. But I didn't know they'd already eclipsed last season's total for alley-oops, and that Horford only had one last year, and he already has 9 this year. Like, it really is crazy. And the two guys who are driving it are Smart and Horford, 2 of the 4 returners, so – just a weird kind of unexpected twist to this season, but they're just throwing alley-oops left and right. Marcus Smart does a really good job of making the defense play him like a scorer. Like, everyone knows he's not a scorer. The entire world knows he cannot put the ball in the basket. But still, he probes enough that guys need to play him like a scorer. Like, he always gets to that point where the guy just commits just a little, and then Horford or Tice or whoever else opens up. And he's gotten really, really good at that. It's really a shame that he can't shoot or finish, because he does so many other things well, including now, you know, probing in the pick and roll, and really does a great job of forcing the big man to do what he wants the big man to do, which is really a skill, especially considering that every big man should be trying to force Marcus Smart to shoot it, whether a layup or a short jumper or whatever the case, and still he gets them to commit to him, and bam, finds Horford wide open for 2 back-to-back alley-oops in the fourth quarter. That's 6 over the last 3 games for Horford, and he only had 1 all of last season. It's insane.
It's wild, and all credit goes to Marcus Smart for just his improvement as a pick-and-roll ball handler. I'm trying to find on NBA.com right now just like what his points per possession on like pick and roll ball handling is, but it feels like he's drastically improved. I mean, I know he's averaging more than assists more a game this year, but I think like he deserves all the credit in the world when he comes off the pick and like he does the kind of just bodies up and gets the defender on his back and then gets the big man to commit. You're right. It's like, there's no reason for them to treat him like he's going to go up with a layup, because that's just not his intention, but he's like thrown. There was one alley-oop the other night where he just like went immediately from dribbling into a one-handed pass into the alley-oop. It was awesome. So shouts to Marcus Smart for drastically improving. Like, I've always thought he's a pretty good passer, but I feel like him in the pick and roll, especially the chemistry without Horford, has been phenomenal this year.
Like, he's elite now at kind of navigating the pick and roll, especially considering his physical traits. Like, he's not the quickest guard. He's not the most explosive guard, obviously, but he keeps guys on his hip. He does a really good job of creating that space. And like I said, he makes people do the wrong thing. He makes the big man defender do the wrong thing, which is committing to him, and then he takes advantage of it. So he's just done a really good job of advancing as a pick-and-roll playmaker. And now he's shooting. We'll give him credit. He's the greatest shooter alive.
I'm the second-best shooter on the team after Jason Tatum. I think that's a fair...
You want to get to the questions, man?
We get to the questions. Yeah, we got the Rain and Jays, Rain and Junk mailbag. We'll do this occasionally. Use the hashtag Rain and Jays if you want to ask a basketball question. Use the hashtag Raining Junk if you want to ask a more absurd question. Starting off, we always start off with a Rain and Junk. This is from Danny Schnathors. Is even just 0.001%, so 1/1000th of a percent, that feels like this team could beat or tie 73-9.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
That's a very, very small percent. Like, do you think it's, like, possible that it could happen? Ever?
No. I mean, think of how good they've been so far. They had a 16-game winning streak. Like, they've won a ton of close games. they're on pace for what, 68 or 69 wins. So no. Don't even dream about it. Don't think about it. Don't consider it. Just put that thought away. It's not going to happen.
I also don't think it's going to happen, but you know what? At that percentage, at 0.0001%, I'm a data guy. I like do data analysis for my day job. Like, that's a very small number. So I think the percentage that it could happen exists, but I would definitely not count on it.
Ooh, you're going yes. You're going yes.
I'm going yes.
Just so you're telling me there's a chance.
That's all I'm telling you, is there's a slight chance that it happens. Who knows? Who knows what happens? But a better question is from Devin Bowman at Bowman Devin, creative tag. What is the ceiling of this Celtics team?
This year?
Yes. Or, yeah, I would say focus on this year.
I think realistically, if everyone else stays healthy, and that's never a given, of course, but if everyone else stays healthy, I think realistically get to the finals. Like, nobody's beating the Warriors this year.
I would have to agree.
I don't think. Unless the Warriors implode. They've got something weird going on. I don't want to say they're in trouble because they're not. I don't want to say they're not the favorite because they are. But, like, Kevin Durant's getting ejected. Like, they're pissy. They don't really care. They're on edge over there. That's not the fun-loving team it has been. And I don't think there's anything, like, concerning over there. But there's some weird dynamic that I don't think we know about that's going on over there, because they have not been in character for a while. They're just totally acting out in ways that outside of Draymond Green, they never did when they were right.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like, this is definitely a weird season. You see Kevin Durant just, like, trying to punk who's Kevin Durant think he is, trying to, like, get in a fight with Boogie Cousins?
I was cool with that. That was kind of absurd. I thought that was cool. That was a cool move.
See, you've been anti-Boogie from Jump Street.
No. This is the thing. Everybody always gives guys grief when they go after the smaller guys. Like, Kevin Garnett used to get a lot of crap because he would go after European dudes, right?
Yeah.
So when you go after the biggest, craziest dude in the league, you should get credit for that. You should get credit for saying whatever you said to Boogie and tempting him, because when you tempt Boogie, you never know what could happen. I know guys will say it's an NBA, we're not ever going to fight, this and that. If DeMarcus Cousins is in the equation, the rules don't exist. So I thought that was – I'm giving Durant credit for that one. I thought that was a cool move.
You know what, Jay? You've completely flipped me on it. You know, I had an initial response, but, like, the reasoning you gave, I 1,000% agree. I'm for it. So, but back to the Warriors, to answer the question, even though there is, like, this weird kind of, like, saltiness to the season, we just saw Steph get hurt, but he'll definitely be back in time. But we've seen so, like, the Cavs just, like, turn it on because they have talent, and just, like, talent wins out in the playoffs. So, even if there is saltiness, I still expect them to be better than the Rockets, who are having a great season. I still expect them to, like, win the Eastern Conference, and I expect them to win the finals. So the ceiling for the Celtics team, I definitely think they have the potential to beat the Cavs, and that puts them in the finals. But I don't think they're at, like, the point where they could beat the Warriors in a 7-game series. So losing in the finals is the kind of the highest level I think they can get to.
Yeah, and I don't think at all that they're the favorite to win the East. I think that's still the Cavs until proven otherwise. But
they could do it.
Yeah. I think that's realistic to dream about that. It's not just a 0.00001 chance.
No, you could actually, like, make a wager on it in Vegas and feel fun. It would be a fun wager. Moving on to Kendall at KendallJW. What happens to Mook after this year? Should the Celtics extend him, trade him, or let him play out next year and then let him walk?
I think the way you look – when you look at the roster, it's kind of set up to trade him. The Celtics don't like to let guys walk. They would much rather turn guys into another asset. And when you look at what they have, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, those guys, obviously keepers. You got Gordon Hayward coming back. He's going to play a ton of minutes at the 3-4 wing spot that Morris occupies this year. Semi Ojeleye, I think he'll be more ready next year. You've got maybe a top 5 pick from the Lakers. You've got the Celtics' own pick, first round pick, whoever that may be. So there are a lot of guys in that position range around Marcus Morris. And I don't want to pretend I know what the Celtics are going to do, because this summer they showed that no matter how much planning I put into predicting what they're going to do, they might just blow me away by going absolutely nutty. But it looks to me like it's set up to move on from Marcus Morris, and that he's just clearly a short-term piece for this squad.
So if the Celtics don't like to let someone walk away, he's got like only this year left on the contract.
He's got 2 years.
Who do you think they? Oh, he's got 2 years. Well, never mind then. I was going to ask you who you think they would potentially trade him for this year, but given I had no idea what his contract situation was, that's no longer a relevant question. But I think it's people are talking about the designated player exception and whether or not the Celtics are going to use that. And I guess the question is, what would you try and add to this team if you had to make a move? And we have some questions later about people like just making some reckless trade ideas. But if there is a move to be made just to change this roster, to add a player, there is space. What do you think the Celtics would go after now?
It would have to be a shooter. But even if you target a shooter, like a scorer off the bench, it's tough to get someone who's going to upgrade the roster. Like, Terry Rozier and Marcus Smart, they're going to come off the bench. They're both good players. Even though they're not shooters, even though they impact the game in different ways, they're good. They're really good. And so to get guys that are better than them, you have to get a legitimate player. Same with Marcus Morris, who's been coming off the bench. Same with Daniel Tice, even. You know, Aaron Baines when he comes off the bench. Whatever it may be. And then if you target a better player, like, say, add draft picks to the DPE and try to go after somebody better, then, like, your starting lineup for the future right now is Kyrie Irving, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Gordon Hayward, and Al Horford. It's really tough to upgrade that. And if you're going to go out and acquire someone who's going to cost money, whether it's, you know, once his rookie contract expires in a year or whatever the case may be, if you're going to have to pay a lot to keep that guy around and he's not going to be a starter, then that's tough. So I do think it's going to be tough for the Celtics to actually find someone to be an upgrade in their rotation, just because they are deep and they are really talented, especially once Hayward comes back.
Yeah, everyone wants to go out and get a shooter, but you want to add a shooter who's just as good as defense as Marcus Smart or Terry Rozier, whoever the guy you're replacing is. There's two parts to every game, so everyone, of course, the Celtics second unit right now could use someone who could make shots at a more consistent rate than the current team. But there's just, you're right, it's going to be very hard to upgrade. So I don't think that they're going to use the DPE into the season. I think they're fine with where the team are. I mean, they certainly have a good enough record. But that gets us into a next question, kind of related to keeping that spot open. This is a bit of a wild question, but this is from Ati Shepard. Any news on Gordon Hayward? Is he still good to go in the finals? Do you think they're just keeping it open so they can bring Gordon Hayward back at some point?
Well, you can still bring Gordon Hayward back even if you use it. So that doesn't that doesn't necessarily preclude him from coming back. The fact that they did get awarded a DPE means that an outside doctor thinks that it will be out through the end of the finals. So I think that's a real long shot. And then, you know, if he's out that long, you get to the point where if you bring him back, is he even going to be good? Like when Paul George came back, I don't remember exactly what he did when he first came back for a few games at the end of the season after he broke his leg, but it wasn't great. Like, he didn't come back and be Paul George immediately. And if you bring Gordon Hayward back at the end of the regular season, whatever. He's not Gordon Hayward. It doesn't matter. That's cool. Work him back in. But if you bring him back and it's the playoffs, and he's not Gordon Hayward, and all of a sudden you're bringing an all-star into the mix, and and he's taking up possessions, and he's not the same player he should be or that he really is when he's healthy, then that's not necessarily a good thing. So I think the odds are against Gordon Hayward coming back this season. I would be pretty surprised to see him again this season.
I'd be downright dumbfounded and shocked. Like, you'd have to bring him out back and, like, have zero expectations for his play. And, like, presumably you're a top two team in the East. Like, you don't really want to mess with anything and just, like, play a guy who's not ready. So he'd, like, have to be worked back very slowly. It'd be – I just don't think it would happen whatsoever.
Yeah. We're on the same page.
Diana, we're on the same page. And we're going to be on the same page on this one because Diana Giselle asks, at Diana Giselle, first part of the question, did you want the Celtics to pick Fultz in the draft? And if so, why did you want him over Jason Tatum? Second part of the question, also, do I have permission to start using Good Breakfast because yes. I'm on board?
Yes. We need to start the Good Breakfast movement. I thought picking Fultz would have been Good Breakfast, to be honest. So when the Celtics were the number one pick, I went back and watched like 12 of his games, all like the whole game. And just as scouting purposes, I thought for sure everyone thought he was going to go to the Celtics. I wanted to familiarize myself with this game. I had huge, huge plans to write like big scouting report when the Celtics did draft him, but they decided to make sure that those 12 games that I watched were totally meaningless. I still think he's going to be a star. I do. I think he's going to be a big, big, big time scorer when he gets healthy. And I'm surprised that Tatum has been as good as he has been. I think a lot of credit goes to Brad Stevens. I think a lot of credit goes to Danny Ainge for seeing that Jason Tatum was different than he was in college. And I think Jason Tatum, like, that kid is just really, really poised and mature and beyond his years and all those cliches that everyone always says about him.
Yeah, no, he's exceeded expectations. It was a really cool video that you tweeted out the other day of Al Horford talking about how Brad Stevens was just like, no, man, enough of this mid-range shit. Like, you're going to shoot the three for us.
That was funny. That was funny because you know that Brad has those conversations because Tatum lived in the mid-range, like, in high school. Like, that was just what he did. Everyone thought he was just going to be, like, a ball-stopping mid-range ISO tough shot taker. And Brad saw him working in pickup and was like, nah, bruh. None of that crap.
Another long two? Really, Jason? You're going to take another long two on me in my practice right now.
But at the same time, like, you can tell a guy to shoot threes however many times you want, and he won't shoot 51.3% unless he's special. So Jason Tatum is a special 19-year-old. He's Good Breakfast, man. Real Good Breakfast.
He's absolutely Good Breakfast. And the thing about – I agree with you. I was all on board the Fultz train. Like, I still think Fultz is going to be really good as well. He's shown that he can score just probably from pretty much any level if his, like, shot returns. I don't know what's going on with his shoulder. It's kind of unfortunate slash super hilarious just because he's a Philadelphia 76er that he's, like, injured in his first rookie season. It feels like a rite of passage at this point. It's like the hanky tax. But, you know, I still think he's going to be really good. But Tatum has just been fucking amazing. Like, there's just been no, like, down point to his game. And how badly do you have to feel? There were some people on Celtics Twitter, shout out to Sam Sheehan, who was, like, very, very anti-Tatum.
I know, that he was so anti-Tatum.
It was hilarious. I can't trust another opinion he has.
He was very anti-Tatum.
I mean, but there's, like, I feel like there's a significant number of people, like Nick Wright said he wouldn't draft Jason Tatum top five. Like, it's just, it goes to show you kind of, like, pre-draft evaluation of players is, especially by, like, people in the media, is usually just super bullshit.
It's just an echo chamber is what it is. It's guys read Draft Express or Kevin O'Connor or whoever else.
And KOC was huge on Jason Tatum. That's what we should have known because that guy's a fucking genius.
Kevin was high on Jason Tatum. He and Sam Vecenie were the two highest that I can recall. But, like, you read something and then you formulate your opinions based on what you read instead of actually watching the player. Like, I watched a lot of Duke last year, and the one thing I thought mid-range jumpers was for sure going to be something that he took a lot of early on. No, that was wrong. But I also disagreed with some of the stuff about him being a defensive liability, because he could really move his feet. He did a lot of switching at Duke, and I thought,
and someone that long can't be like that much of a defensive liability. Like, he's athletic and like moves his feet well, and just has the longest arms in the league. Like,
the entire Buck roster says hello and says that they disagree, except for Giannis.
Jason Tatum is long as fuck, man. He's just ridiculous. But the idea that he wasn't going to be good at defense just doesn't really like make sense. And I'm not like much of a. I don't watch much college basketball. I watch the same Draft Express videos. I'm not much of a scouter, but just like, it doesn't make any sense to me now, like, thinking that he would be bad at defense, just given his physical attributes.
Yeah, no, he definitely wasn't as good on defense at Duke as he has been this year. He's come a long way. And he had an ankle injury early at Duke that he missed the first few games. And I'm sure that hindered him for a while. And There were a lot of extenuating circumstances. It's such a quick season in college, so the scouts, like, Danny Ainge has known these guys for years and years and years, and he draws from a long well of information that really we're not a part of. We just read Draft Express and read Kevin O'Connor and read Sam Vecenie, and then we get in the echo chamber and form Sam Sheehan-like opinions about Jason Tatum.
So let's do it. We have a question about this. Let's get in the echo chamber. Who would you target right now with the 2-5 pick?
Yes, the echo chamber.
This is from the waiter at TSMFOTP. That's not an easy name to say, but who would you target with the 2-5 pick? Jay King, you're more in the echo chamber than I am. This is your profession. What are you hearing on the echo chamber walls?
See, I've actually been watching a lot of college hoops.
Ooh, go on.
Right now, if I had a choice, I think Luka Doncic might be the best player. He's unreal. Like, super stud, like 6'7", point guard, has every skill you could ever want. He's going to be great. But for the Celtics' perspective, like, they have their playmaker in Kyrie Irving, right? To me, if you're going to add someone to the Celtics, you'd want someone long and athletic. Someone who can fill in for Aaron Baines when he's gone, right? And so I think Marvin Bagley is going to be a stud for a long time. I think Bamba defensively is the best big man in the draft. I think Michael Porter, I saw him when he was in high school, and that kid, oh, man. He's talented. If he can pass the health tests, that dude is going to go top five, maybe as high as number one, even though he'll miss his whole college season. So there aren't really a lot of bad moves the Celtics can make in the top five from my perspective. They're going to get a good one if they get that pick. And they might, because the Lakers are kind of struggling.
Not playing well right now, kind of struggling. In terms of fit with the Celtics roster, who do you think fits in kind of with the young core that they have now? I mean, it would be wild to put like a small forward like Porter out there and just have like the switchability of Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, and Michael Porter. But the other idea would be Al Horford's not the youngest guy. He's the oldest guy on the team. So do you want to go after a big man? Like, in terms of roster building, do you think it matters to them? Or is just I guess I'm asking who would be the best fit?
I think one of the big guys, right? And whether it's play next to Horford or one day move on from Horford because he's the oldest of the core, I think that makes sense because Aaron Baines has a one-year deal. You know, he's not going to be there for forever. I think Bagley, I think Bamba, and then Porter. Like, you can never have enough wings. They've shown that they want to load up on wings. They want long, switchy athletes. And Porter's a special talent, man. So honestly, anybody in the top five is stud, 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 stud. If that pick conveys, they'll add another really good talent. It's kind of crazy the luck that they've had lately and the moves that they've made lately. Like they got another top five pick because they traded back to take Jason Tatum. they might have gotten the best player in the draft and a top five pick out of it. Shout out to Danny Ainge because that was a risk, or at least a lot of people thought that was a risk.
To him, he was very confident. He's turned out to be right. So shouts to Danny Ainge.
Yeah, and we say that knowing or not knowing what Fultz is going to be. Like, if Tatum's this good and if he develops like people we think he is, then it doesn't matter how good Fultz is, because as long as Tatum's a star, that trade's a win.
Yeah, I mean the draft is a complete crapshoot, but if you can just anyone of Jason Tatum's talent, you take it. Moving on to the next question from Bobby Manning at Real Bobby Manning. Shouts to Bobby Manning for getting his ass kicked by Jay King in one-on-one. That was one of the funnier things I got to witness. I don't know why I was there. It just was near my work, so I decided to come watch. Great times.
That was an ugly one-on-one match.
Yeah, no, it's I don't think Bobby Manning at that time had played a lot of basketball, and he challenged you, and it was for the content game, I respect it, but for the basketball game, not as much. But his question is, what can be done to get Al Horford some rest? He has an aging body and has been injured in the past. Do you think they need a, like, rest Horford in a way, kind of like a Popovich way he does with all his players?
No, I think Horford's fine. I mean, if you look at last season, Horford got to the playoffs and played the best basketball he played all season. And he was playing 32.3 minutes per game last year. He's at 32.6 minutes per game this year, so he's almost the exact same. Like, Brad Stevens never loads up minutes for his key guys. He'll never do that. So these guys should be pretty well rested. They don't practice ever. Like, Brad is very good about keeping these guys off their feet. And I think Horford's just in great shape. I don't see his rest being a factor. I mean, when you look at it, and I think I've said this a few times on the podcast by now, but when you looked at his contract at the beginning, it was like, is that going to be a bad deal by the end of it? Because, you know, he's going to be 32, 33 years old in his final season, might not be worth all that money. Well, he's only gotten better. He's playing the best basketball of his life. So I don't think rest for him is a huge issue. I think they'll be conscious of the minutes and they'll limit the minutes, but it's not a thing where you're going to have to, you know, be super careful about what Al Horford's doing, because he's in great shape. And like he showed last year, he played his best basketball in the postseason. He was more than ready to go in the postseason. So I don't think it's a concern. Do you, Sam?
No, I think he's playing with like the most energy we've ever seen him play with. And like, unless you're like really worried about him extending too much energy while he's doing this, it's just, I would have no reason to kind of question his stamina and his ability to play. You're right, Brad is like, no matter what, he's gonna like work in the rotations. There's a lot of people get like angry at him for playing some all bench units. It's like he's trying to see what works. He's not trying to overplay like all the players like over 35 minutes a game. It's really rare if you see that happen, and so I don't think it's something you necessarily have to worry about. And literally, it's just like Brad has not thought that it's necessary, so I will just generally agree with him because, you know, he's a lot better basketball coach than I am.
I don't know, Sam. I think they'd be 22-3 with you under the helm.
It'd be a lot more fun to fans, let me tell you that. There's a couple of questions we got about big trades for Anthony Davis or Karl-Anthony Towns. I'm just going to ignore them because that just leads to dumb speculation, and I just don't think it's going to happen. So moving on to something way more important, Daniel Tice. This is from Space Cowboy at Troy Matthew. With Daniel Tice's efficiency on both ends in such few minutes, do you think he ever gets starting nods over Morris and Baines?
I'm always a big fan of Tice questions. I don't know.
Tice is excellent. Tice is excellent.
Tice is nice. I don't think...
No. We don't say Tice is nice. We say Tice is nice is too generic. So we say anything but Tice is nice.
Tice is beautiful.
That's the movement I'm trying to start. This is Tito 2.0.
Tice is good breakfast.
Tice is quite good breakfast.
Yeah. But I don't think he's a starter. I mean, unless you want to start big-ish with Tyson in the starting lineup, bring Morris off the bench and have Baines to battle against a Greg Monroe or another second unit big man like that. That's the only time I think it really makes sense. Tice is really good, but the one thing about him, he's not quite big enough to guard like huge guys. He's going to be at a strength disadvantage. He's going to be at a height disadvantage against most starting centers. So I think he's better off most of the time in bench units, especially because Marcus Smart can just throw him alley-oops at all times.
You know, Marcus Morris threw him the alley-oop the other night, and he finished it while getting fouled. That was pretty impressive.
That was pretty impressive. I wasn't prepared for the Mook Morris alley-oop.
No, he had some two assists the other night, and we'll get to Mook Morris later because I just learned he blocked me on Twitter, and we have some questions about that.
Ooh,
who knows? Who knows what's going on there? I do not, definitely not beef with Mook Morris. I have zero anything with beef with Mook Morris. That's not something I want to deal with. But Tice has been a pleasant surprise, and he's just like a good energy off the bench. I've been impressed with his, I'm going to say positional defense, and I can't tell if that's just like coded language for white, like tall white guy, because that's the same thing I used to describe Kelly Olynyk. But I think he's done a pretty good job on defense, and he's like shown himself in the pick and roll.
Can I say?
You can't like as it.
Go ahead.
Go on.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry.
3, 2, 1. His positional defense has been amazing. I know I described Kelly Olynyk in the same way, so it may just be me talking about tall white guys, but I've been very impressed with just his energy off the bench, and he's like the guy you need. Just for a person who's going to play, I don't think he's going to start like the questioner asked, but I think he's for a guy who's playing 12 minutes a game, he's exactly what you want. So I've been very impressed by him.
I'm going the other way. I'm using the non-white coded language. He's a freak.
Athletic freak.
Daniel Tice is a freak. He dunks everything. He blocks everything. He's like 6'9", 215 pounds, and he's a legitimate center. So, I mean, he's not your regular positional defense white boy. He is a very mobile positional defense white boy. A real freak, as I would say. He's good breakfast.
He's getting it with the blocks. He's been extremely just active on the defensive end, and I've been impressed by him, so I'm a huge fan of him. This is the point of the night where we transfer from the Reigning Jays questions to the Reigning Junks questions. But before we do that, we have to talk about our friends at Draft. Draft is the app that I'm addicted to now because, I don't know, I lose $3 every single time I do it, but it's just the best fantasy sports app that I've experienced. Instead of doing like a, it's similar to the other fantasy sports apps, except you have a snake draft where you go up against your finest friends like me on the Locked On Celtics podcast. You can also play against John Corrales. Jay King has yet to join the draft network, but we'll get him there. He's just too busy on his grind.
I just want to give the people a chance to win money. I know it's easy to beat you. I know it's easy to beat John. It's not going to be as easy to beat me. I would go in there and win that thing. But anyways, Draft is amazing. Draft is, you do a snake draft, so it's not your normal fantasy draft. You have a draft where every player is only taken once. So it's not like you can have multiple teams with the same player having the same guys on their team. Everybody has a different roster. And it's just a different way to do it. A lot more fun. You can play in a real live NBA draft right now. You can be done in under 5 minutes and get paid out the next day. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join one whenever you want. All new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit. But you have to use my promo code LOCELTICS. That's right, playing a real money draft for free just by using my promo code LOCELTICS. But it gets even better. Draft is so sure you love it that they're even offering Locked On Celtics listeners a money-back guarantee up to $100. Just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and come play free right now with promo code LOCELTICS. All right, let's get to the questions now. My man, we're going to start with my man Hebert of Riffs. Maybe the top Celtics tweeter of all time. Definitely one of the top Celtics tweeters ever. In the pantheon of Celtics tweeters, he is a real cool dude, and he'll appreciate me saying that.
And his question is, which Celtic is most capable of killing with their bare hands? I asked. This is both emotionally and just physically capable of murdering someone.
Okay. So it can't be Yabu. Like, Yabu physically could kill someone. But Yabu...
But he's too nice.
Yabu's
you saw him,
too
you
joyful.
You saw him dance in that GIF.
Yeah, he's just too joyful. So the other day...
No one who dances that nice is going to murder someone.
The other day, I almost walked into him on my way into the locker room. And he just backed up and let me by. So, just a sweet, gentle giant. So he can't kill anyone. I think because we noted that he blocked you on Twitter, I think I'm going to have to say that Marcus Morris is probably up there. Marcus Morris.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah.
Is willing and able to kill a man with his bare hands if necessary. And it might be Sam Packard, judging by his Twitter blocks. And then Marcus Smart, I think, is certainly capable. Marcus Smart. I don't think he often gets in the mood where he wants to kill someone with his bare hands, but when he does flip the switch, he's not the guy you want to mess with.
Yeah, that's an important distinction. Herberto F. Riffs, as I call him, just said killing, and I implied murdering, and there's different. I think if, like, in self-defense,
ooh,
pretty much anyone in the Celtics could like, kill anyone. I think they're professional athletes. I think they could do it, but Marcus Smart seems particularly just, like, back down into a corner. I'm relying on Marcus Smart to get out alive. Shea Serrano recently had a chapter in his book of basketball and other things of, like, guys you would want in a – I think it was Zombly – no, it was in The Reckoning or wherever there's just, like, 24 hours of murder. If I had a leader of my squad, it would definitely be Marcus Smart. He would, like – he comes up in huge and, like, every clutch situation. I have complete faith in Marcus Smart saving my life. And because of that, I have complete faith in him murdering someone if it's the thing you need to happen at that moment.
I feel like every time one of these questions comes up, we always settle on Marcus Smart. It doesn't matter what the question is. We just always just agree that Marcus Smart would find a way to win.
Yeah, because the questions are always like, who's the Celtics who would do this most extreme thing? And it's like, yeah, it's Marcus Smart. He's amazing.
I feel like Tice would be a cool collector, though. Like, if you needed him to kill someone, and that was the purpose of this game. Now we're changing things a little bit, because then you said, you know,
if you needed a hitman, is what you're asking.
We're going with a purge type situation. I think Tice is just going to be a cool collector, like cool collected dude. He's not going to get rattled. Tice is unflappable.
I can't argue with you. I think we've delved into a weird territory where we're talking about Celtics players actively murdering people, but I would have to agree with your general assessment. The next reigning junk question is from the original Australian reigning Jays fan, Justin Hunter at Aus Celtics fan. But I just want to give a shout out. I love all the love we get from Australia. It's fucking cool. I want to go to Melbourne. I want to become an Aussie Football League fan. The Australian people have been great to the Reigning Jays, but the question is, which current Celtics player are you most like and why?
Ooh. That's a tough one. Who would you go with, Sam?
I'm going to have to go with Al Horford because I'm great at everything and I have great eyes. it's a very difficult question to like answer because there's like 15 like distinct personalities who are very much like not that similar to what we do. But I don't know. Is there anything like where you can see a player and you're like, oh, that's kind of similar to who I am? Because when I first read this, I first saw this question come in. I've been trying to think about it and just like no one comes to mind. It feels weird saying like, oh yeah, I'm like I'm a real Semi Ojale guy, you know?
Yeah. I would say I'm kind of like the Kyrie of the podcast game.
You're woke as fuck?
What I say doesn't always make sense.
Fair.
But I'm capable of putting together some magic every once in a while. and I'm probably overrated in certain spots of the world, but I can also but I can also carry you in clutch moments at times. So I'm very tough to judge, is what I'm trying to say. Also, I have no idea where I'm going with this. And
I think that worked. That played. You have some great moments. You're a bit of a wild card. You don't really know what you're talking about half the time. I think it's perfect.
By the way, though, last eight games, 58% plus shooting for
that's absurd.
Kyrie, he is on another planet right now. Like for a point guard to be doing what he's doing, that one move he made to the baseline against Milwaukee, and he was special for a lot of
with
that
the
game.
Left hand, the one where he finished with the left hand.
There were three defenders. And there was no room to drive, and he looked at the baseline where there was like 6 inches of space, and he's like, you know what? Let's see if I can do this. I think I might be able to. And he drove and finished with his left hand, and it was like, what in the hell is wrong with you to even try that? And then to be able to convert it was spectacular. He has been – there were obviously – early on in the season, there were not concerns, but he wasn't playing his most efficient basketball. He has been on another planet recently. The Celtics have, like, he's unlocked right now. He's unleashed. He has been very, very great over the last 8 or 9 games.
It's like I've literally run out of things to, like, describe what he does, and it's the thing that just strikes me is just how casual he is in everything he does. Like, it just makes everything look incredibly easy when he's just finishing at the rim and things just in ways that just don't make sense. And it's in a completely different ways that don't make that doesn't make sense compared to Isaiah Thomas, because Isaiah Thomas last year would, like, he would have some finishes over some guys or make some baskets with some spin off the top of the glass that just didn't make any sense. And that was just kind of, it felt like he was sneaking it by. With Kyrie, it's the way he makes it so easy. It just, and he always has the right spin around the basket or like the right positioning. The fact that he can jump off any foot or the fact that he can use any hand and is willing to switch hands in midair, it's just, it's absurd. And I wish I was better at speaking English so I could just describe what he does, but I'm not a very smart man. So I'm just spouting nonsense right now. And that's what Kyrie Irving makes me do. It's kind of just my mouth drops. It's like, how the fuck did he just do that?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that one finish, honestly. And then when he threw the alley-oop to Jalen, that was just amazing.
It was so unnecessary, but it was awesome.
So totally unnecessary. And he set Jalen up for like a really tough finish. It wasn't like Jalen was by himself behind Kyrie.
It was a contested dunk, and Jalen threw it home.
Yeah, that was really the work of a lunatic. But Kyrie was feeling a little spicy. I don't know what it was about Milwaukee, but he was.
He's always feeling spicy.
No. But he was heated. There was something else going on with him. He wasn't his normal, like, regular old relaxed self. He was kind of barking at people and talking that crap. I liked it, man. I appreciated that. I need more of that out of Kyrie.
Anytime, like, the kind of the cool guy just shows a little bit of emotion, like if Horford gets like a bit excited, or even Kyrie like that, he was in it with Bledsoe the other night. It's so much more exciting just because it's more fun to see these guys have emotion than be super calm. I'm waiting for the Tatum just like breakout angry moment.
I'm still waiting for the Marcus Morris. What the hell, man? Like, you're a Morris twin. What the hell? Where's the
you
beef?
You have a reputation to uphold in this league, sir.
Where's the beef? You're supposed to give me some beef, man.
You just wait to the Wizards game on Christmas Day. Like, the Morris v. Morris would be a fun fight.
I need Morris v. Morris.
It's going to be amazing. I don't think it's going to happen because brothers generally don't usually fight during basketball games on national television, but it might happen.
This team has no beef now, man. There's just no beef.
Well, they haven't played like anyone who's like a serious contender to offer them beef. Like, Toronto came in and just played a shitty game on like a Sunday afternoon. But in terms of competition in the East, we saw last night the Bucks are kind of like a team who I thought was going to compete at their level, but they have like a near 500 record. So, I mean, who do they have to beef with right now? Like, there's no like legitimate contender other than the Cavs. And when the Cavs come back and Isaiah's hopefully back, that's going to be wild and that's going to be a huge game. And I think if there's going to be beef unfold, maybe it's there, but probably not, because Isaiah is like probably is friends with most of the, I guess, only four of them. But I don't know. who do the Celtics have to beef with?
I mean, think about it. When they started their beef with the Wizards, there was neither of the teams were really like legit. I mean, it turned out they were two of the better teams in the East, but when that beef started, they were just kind of nobodies. And I need some Pistons beef. I need, like, Embiid is out here just beefing with everybody. And
Embiid's too shook to even come out and play against the Celtics, man. He's scared of Al Horford.
Yeah, I'm not so convinced that's the case.
No, it's probably definitely not true. He just can't play back-to-backs, but it's a fun thing to say.
Yeah, he's definitely petrified. Petrified. I might be the Joel Embiid of
the podcast game, talking a lot of shit and occasionally backing it up.
Yeah, I do talk a lot. I probably talk the most shit of the podcasters.
Oh, you definitely do, and it's one of the things that makes the kid great is his confidence.
Yeah. Yeah, there we go.
All right, moving on.
Make me the Marcus Morris, irrationally confident? Ooh.
No, because you pass more than I think Marcus Morris does. And please, Marcus, like I didn't, I no effect. I love the fact that you don't pass. That's what makes you. Please unblock me on Twitter, man. Like, nothing but love for Marcus Morris. Just like admit facts. You don't enjoy passing the ball. You're looking for your shot. Well, I'm a big fan of that. That's what the second unit needs. But just unblock me on Twitter, please. I'd like to have a good discourse with you over Twitter.
What I like about Marcus Morris, I appreciate his game because it's very much not the type of game I appreciate. Like I like the ball moving, but he's great at mid-range ISOs, and they kind of need it for the bench. And the way he goes to work, like you can just see him line up his defender, and it's like, you know, The Legend of Bagger Vance? Have you seen that movie?
I'm aware of it. I've never seen that movie. It's Matt Damon and Will Smith playing golf. But
so he finds, Matt Damon's character finds his true authentic swing. And when he does that, like, he stops seeing everybody else. Like, he doesn't see the gallery. He doesn't see his caddy. He just sees, like, a lane to where he's hitting the ball. And I feel like that's Marcus Morris. Like, he lines up his defender, and all of a sudden, like, the entire arena is just empty. And all he sees is the hoop. And I don't even know if he sees the defender at that point. Like, it might just
be... Where else would he go? That's the only thing he can see. It makes perfect sense.
It might just be him in the hoop. And that's all he sees. And it's particularly funny because when he does pass, he's a very capable passer.
Great.
Yeah, like, he can really throw some nice passes. It's just when he sees the matchup he wants, his eyes, like, I'm telling you, like, everything
else
disappears.
The matchup he wants, he was up against Giannis. It was just like, all right, one dribble, pull-up jumper. It's against, like, the longest guy in the league. And every single matchup is the matchup Marcus Morris wants. And
that's what I'm saying.
Awesome.
Just give him the ball. Just give him the ball, and that's the matchup he wants.
The thing is, like, the Celtics have really needed that. Like, in the games where he's scored more than 15 points or, like, 12 points, they very much needed his scoring, and they need some guy on the second unit to, like, just go get some buckets because also you're relying on the shooting of basically, like, Marcus Smart after that or, like, Daniel Tice. So Mook and plays a very important role, so he needs to go get his.
I love it. I might start calling him Bagger Vance.
There you go.
Or because it wasn't Bagger Vance who actually had it; it was Randolph Juna. So I might start
Randolph Junior.
Randolph Juna. Randolph.
That's a terrible name.
Randolph.
Juna. Randolph.
Randolph.
I don't think that's going to catch on in terms of nicknames.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say it out loud. I'm just going to think it to myself, you know.
Well, that's good enough.
Yeah.
I think we're going to wrap up here. I think we're around the hour mark, which is wild. But from Mike Dinan, shout outs to Red's Army and John Corrales. But who is the biggest Celtics hater on Twitter, parentheses, other than every Lakers fan who won't admit Tatum is better than Ball and Kuzma? Are there actually Lakers fans who are like kind of standing for Lonzo Ball being better than Jason Tatum right now?
I don't think so. Is that a thing?
I mean, I would imagine so, because all fan bases are incredibly irrational and the Lakers have a very large fan base. So like the level of irrationality goes through the roof. But I just can't imagine, given the amount of time games played and the fact that this was a great tweet today, that Jason Tatum's 3-point percentage is better than Lonzo Ball's free throw percentage right now. And Jason Tatum's actually made more 3-pointers than Lonzo Ball has attempted free throws. I don't see how you could argue that.
Yeah, Tatum is on another level than Lonzo is right now. I'm pretty comfortable saying that. I don't think that's an outrageous take.
That's objective fact right now. But the real question is, who is the biggest Celtics hater on Twitter?
I don't know if he's the biggest Celtics hater, but I saw someone, one of the Sixers writers or Sixers personalities, tweet something like, and I don't even know if he was being serious, because the tweet was a little over the top. I really don't know if he was being sarcastic or what. He tweeted something like, this game, it was when the Celtics beat the Sixers without Joel Embiid. It was like, this game shows more evidence that the Celtics are a regular season gimmick and the Sixers are on the rise, like as a power or something.
That's got to be an outrageous hot take. Like, that has to be ironic.
It was, I don't know if it was, because it was such an aggressive take that even Danger Cart got mad about it. Like, Danger Cart doesn't get mad very often, but he was fired up on Twitter, and that's how I saw it. Was he sent back some real spicy retort, and
if Danger Cart's responding back, I feel like he has a pretty good sensor for sarcasm as well. So he would be able to identify the ironic tweet. So that's fair. That's one of the dumbest things I've heard in a while. And Sixers land, man. I lived in Philadelphia for a year, and the Philly sports fan is something I just never really encountered. But the irrational confidence and craziness of Sixers sports fans and their just willingness to engage in – they're basically like the Alex Jones of sports takes, the InfoWars fan base. And that's just a small shout-out to the weirdest parts of Celtics Twitter right now. But you're right. That is a completely – bizarre take. In terms of haters of Celtics Twitter, I like the only person that immediately came to mind was Justin Rowan at Cavs Nada from Fear the Sword. That guy he fucking hates the Celtics and is proud of it. And it's like, that's the problem, is like, respect him for how much of a troll he is.
Yeah,
like,
he's pretty good at Twitter. I appreciate it too. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah, no, it's something I'd want to master, but he's so good. Like, there's so many times I tweet something at him and thinking I won, and he comes back with something better, and I just go, oh, fuck. And so, like, you tip your hat to that guy, and you play the next you just go for the next hoop. But yeah, I think he's the biggest Celtics hater. I can't think of anyone else who, like, really qualifies.
People think Matt Moore is a Celtics hater, but he's not, which is funny.
No, he hates every team equally. He's just like – kind of like he's a cynical NBA fan. He gives like the good perspective. I like appreciate that. And everyone thinks he hates him. No, he just,
and it's
he just give.
Yeah, it's funny because he'll give like both sides. He'll give the bad stats and then the good stats. And he normally has a pretty good grasp on reality. And reality is a tough thing sometimes for fans to digest.
No, fans are not reality-based, and I think they need to adjust their perspectives.
Yeah, fans aren't fully woke all the time.
But they – hopefully, by listening to the Rain and Jays, they will be more woke. We're probably the wokest Daily Celtics podcast. I know we're the best Daily Celtics podcast, but hopefully fans listen to us and just get more informed. And if you, like – I don't know. If you have friends who also like the Celtics, you could tell us about our podcast. We can download it literally anywhere you get podcasts. You can find us. You search Locked On Celtics. It'd be great if you joined us in this kind of podcast journey we're on.
Yeah. Yeah. Join us in the podcast journey. Search for Locked On Celtics podcast. Sam, are you getting a Skype call over there, man?
I'm not. Is my audio fucking up?
Yeah, I don't know. I just thought I heard a Skype call, but that's cool. That's cool. If you are getting one, we'll let you go. We just crossed the hour threshold. That's a barrier. So we'll let you go.
That's what happens when the people came. Well, I had to cut a lot of questions tonight. The people, there's a bunch of junk questions we didn't get to, but you know what? We don't want to like bore you people, but I appreciate everyone writing in questions. Keep doing that. We'll like read them after every we do that after every game. We'll definitely read a bunch of questions during mailbags. It's just really cool to see people participating. So use hashtag Raining Jays or Raining Junk during the game, and you're probably going to be heard on the post game podcast. So please do that.
Shout out to you guys. Search for Locked On Celtics podcast wherever you get your podcast. Follow us, subscribe to us, send us a love note. Do whatever you want, man. Send us hate. Send us love. Send us joy. Send us pictures of what you're buying your significant other for Christmas. Send us whatever you want.
Nah, I don't want to see that. But send us stuff that's like Celtics relevant, because
that better bullshit. Be Celtics relevant. It better be a goddamn beautiful Ojale jersey. All right, that's a good place to end. Take care, everyone. That's it for this episode of the Locked On Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Yeah, J. King and John Corrales, Locked On Celtics.